Hi, this is Tony, the host of the Flicks X-Rayed podcast. Each week, I am joined by guests. Hello.
Yo.
Why, hello there.
Hello.
And we have a roundtable discussion where we X-ray a bunch of our favorite films and some really terrible ones. If you want, you can follow us on all the major platforms.
To find out more, you can find us online at www.flicksxrayed.com.
And you can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram if you want to reach out to us. Good night, Internet.
Hi. Harry, what a surprise. It's good to see you. Hey, it's not what it looks like. Tony and I are old friends. Ain't that right, Tony? Harry and I were partners. Huh, Harry? Well, more than partners, huh? Good times, huh, Harry? No. No, Harry. Harry, no!
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
I have got my VR goggles on. That doesn't play.
No, that doesn't play at all. What have you been doing all weekend? Have you been playing video games all weekend?
No, I've not done any video games. My brain is just turned off. That's because
we've been podcasting all week long. On our show, but you and I guessed it on Flix X-Ray this week.
Yes, we did.
And then you were on
Ignorance Was Bliss with Kate.
So we're all over the place today.
Yes, yeah.
This whole week.
Yeah, I was getting on my way here. I'm like, oh, I am so talked out, but I'm going to do it anyhow.
It's not just invading the remakes. We are invading the internet.
Yes.
Yes.
Interwebs,
look out. Invasion of the Remake is all over the place. But it's not just Sam and I today. It is a special day because my co-host from all sorts of shows I've used to do with Richard Cleveland is finally on this show. And honestly, I probably wouldn't be sitting here without him.
It only took four years. And we did three shows together, I think.
Yeah,
over the course of 3-4 years.
Between the Pages was the big one.
Yeah.
Popcorn Lobby.
Yeah.
What was the other one? Some precursors to Between the Pages.
Yeah.
I think it went through the splash page and other iterations.
Yeah, until we finally settled on what it was. And then, you know, I miss that show. And I actually have people asking me about it all the time because we produced that under the Naked Ape banner.
Yep.
Naked Ape Productions, for anybody that doesn't know, was our original banner. And you know, that show, people still, when they see me at conventions and stuff, oh, it's the ape guy. It's the ape guy. How come you guys don't do a podcast anymore? And, well, you know, we've moved on to bigger and better things.
That's right. And, you know, you've got your own another show. It's a 3D printing show right now, which seems to be very appropriate for this week's episode.
Yeah, it kind of fits in. The first layer is the show that I do now. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing that for almost 2 years now. Coming up in October, it'll be 2 years, and we've had tremendous growth, and I love the hobby. I started out with one really bad printer, and now I own 7 really good printers.
Wow, that's crazy. That's like a labor camp of robots.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I have to make them all silent, because when they're all going at home, I get the, you know, the nagging wife going, close the door, I can't watch my movie.
But I'm printing you a prop from it.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we've done a lot of props, a lot of statues.
Right.
We continue to teach and educate. We entertain along the way, and we engage with our audience every Saturday night through a live stream. So
Cool. Where can they find the show?
They can find it at YouTube, The First Layer on YouTube. All you have to do is just go and check that out. Or you can find us on Facebook as well under our groups and just go to The First Layer there and become a member if you're into 3D printing or want to learn a little bit more about it.
Awesome. Yeah. So, yeah, I thought that was a good fit today because we are going to be talking about the 1986 action thriller called FX.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, which spawned a sequel and a short-lived television series in the 90s. I'm not sure if the TV series got outside of Canada very much, but...
It was produced in Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it was produced for syndication. So it might have been not as readily available in certain regions.
No, I don't think it was. I think it would have done better because it wasn't a half-bad show.
No, but it did introduce the world to Carrie Ann Moss, who would go on to the Matrix films and some fame there. And then those were done, and we don't see much of her.
That's not true.
She's working.
She was in almost all the Netflix Marvel stuff.
What?
Yeah, she was.
She played the lawyer.
Oh, right. I totally forgot about her. You're right. She was. She was debuted in the Jessica Jones.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I know I'm right.
Actually,
I don't get to be right at home. I get to be right here.
That's not even that often here either.
She actually debuted in, if I'm not mistaken, Daredevil first.
I think just like a minor appearance, but yeah, she was a regular player in Jessica Jones, and that's where the majority of her appearances are. But I think she did wind up appearing in Iron Fist as well. Yeah,
and Defenders.
And Defenders. I don't know if she showed up in Luke Cage.
She was there for, I believe, 2 episodes in the second season.
Oh, that could be, yeah.
Yeah.
But well, yeah.
That's a good place to land. Yeah, but going from the exposure of The Matrix to guest appearances on a Netflix TV series, I mean, it's not like she blew up, but she was great in Memento.
Well, and now that she's been on Netflix, Netflix does have a tendency to reuse their actors like CW does or whatever. Right. So, and put them on other shows. And it tends to be fairly successful for them because they're already familiar through, like, say, Orange is the New Black, that girl was on there and now is on that Groundhog Day type show. I'm watching it, so I can't remember the name of it. But
I started watching it. It's pretty good.
Yeah, no, it seems to be getting good reviews and stuff. So, but not the only person to be introduced through FX. This movie introduced to the world the very first appearance of Angela Bassett.
In her first feature film appearance. Yep. She had done some TV, but this was her first feature film appearance.
And I totally missed it. I was looking for
it. It's a very short scene.
Yeah, she's just a TV reporter. So.
Yeah, she is literally an extra in this movie.
Very, very short scene. Yeah.
The only reason she gets the credit is because she has dialogue.
Yeah, which is a big deal. But it wouldn't take very long, 86, and it was only within 4 or 5 years, she'd be like featuring in films. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, was that kind of talent? It was inevitable, right?
Oh, yeah.
She went on to star as Tina Turner.
That's right.
In the Tina Turner story. And did an amazing job there.
We first talked about her in episode 119.
Strange Days.
I forgot that she was in that.
Oh, she was such a badass in that movie. That's where I fell in love with her.
I fell in love with her for the Tina Turner biopic, but I haven't seen Strange Days since I think it came out.
That's a shame.
Because it's a real drug-induced movie.
Well, it's a very... That's part of the theme, so yeah.
And when you're not doing drugs anymore and you watch a drug-induced movie, they're just not nearly as memorable.
Well, having not done them, you get the contact high from the movies that do.
Yes. Yeah. Now, it's a favorite of mine. I still love that movie.
I do, too. Yeah.
That was a tough one to remake, as is this one. When watching it, I'm like, geez, this stands up really well still. There's some flaws, but I disagree. There's parts of it that don't, but I think that as far as the story goes, it stands up really well.
I used to love this movie, and to me, the story doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, there's tons of plot holes in it.
Oh, huge. To be honest, it is a very basic plot device that is made overcomplicated through the film. To be honest, I mean, it's got great reviews, and I think it's fooled a lot of people because it's not a very well-written movie.
It's lacking cohesion, certainly.
It's got some dubious acting.
Some of it's pretty dubious. But the thing to remember, too, is this was written as a TV movie with ideas that pilot. It wasn't written as a feature film, and some genius at a studio went, we can make a movie out of this, no problem at all.
Oh, well, that was Orion, who was already having trouble, but, you know, they were looking at low budget things to work, and it was a minor success for them. Like
they doubled its budget.
Yeah, it doubled their budget, and they didn't put a lot of extra advertising and stuff behind it. I mean, they did, but I mean, they were still having problems at the time. So, well, they eventually would fold.
Well, you know, this movie came out at a time when smaller movie companies like Canon, Orion, even TriStar at the time, mm-hmm. were all kind of throwing things at the wall to see what was sticking. Mm-hmm. And people that you wouldn't think would be in films like this were showing up and becoming major action stars. And, mm-hmm. you know, the star of this pick, Brian Brown, who you would never think of as an action star.
No, here's this kind of tall, thin Australian yeah. actor who really hadn't had much of an American presence at this point as a lead actor. So this was a big, big break for him. And in like 2 years later, he'd be co-starring in Cocktail with Tom Cruise. So
yeah. And a number of other movies. Rob Roy was in too.
Oh yeah. He was in lots and lots yeah. of movies after this. So this was a big break, but he would not return for the television series and would be recast by another Australian.
And I mean, at that point, he was an in-demand film actor mm-hmm. when this TV series came out. So it would make sense that he wouldn't return for the TV mm-hmm. series, which is pretty common, right? is recasting for TV.
Yeah, and you know, we look at some of the other characters in this film as it builds, and we look at Brian Dennehy's character as sort of the lead cop who kind of doesn't really know what's going on and figures, okay, the main character Raleigh is this villain that has killed somebody and then realizes, wait a second, maybe I'm wrong about this.
Yeah, it ties back to an old case of his where he had put away this mob boss, Nicholas DeFranco. In the course of this story, like DeFranco is presumed dead at a scene, but he's not the investigating officer. He's investigating a different murder that happened in an apartment, which was Raleigh's apartment and his actress girlfriend, who was right. shot near the window because of something Raleigh had done earlier in the movie, which was being hired by the Justice Department to create a fake scenario to put DeFranco into witness protection.
Right.
So everybody would think he was dead before he could go to trial. At least that's what they said.
What I think the biggest plot hole for me in this whole movie, and I don't know if you guys agree with it, but why would you set up a nobody? Like, here was a guy who was working in the film industry, and this is where the story becomes very convoluted for me. They go and hire a name in the effects industry, hence the name of the movie, mm-hmm. and they end up setting him up and trying to either get him killed or put away for life.
Well, initially they were just going to kill him because they set up this thing to fake kill him, but they made it look like he actually did kill him by making it look like they had messed with the gun. Now, the whole plot really boils down to they just wanted to steal this dude's money.
Yeah.
And they kept him alive so they could figure out where the key was to do it. But it, you know, in my back of my mind, I'm like, okay, this sounds like they're setting Brian Brown's character of Raleigh up to be a patsy, which doesn't really happen.
Well, it doesn't happen.
They just keep trying to chase him to kill him because he's the only one outside of them that knows that this took place in the first place.
Right.
Even though they basically did exactly what they said they were going to do. They were going to put this guy into witness protection, except for nefarious purposes.
Right.
Which we don't find out until near the end of the movie what they are.
That's one of the flaws in the movie. And you're right about the fact that they're setting him up as a patsy, but he's never actually set up as a patsy. The crime that he's getting chased for is completely separate.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crime that he actually does commit
yeah.
in defense
but he
against these people.
Because DeFranco actually didn't get killed.
But he does kill the guy in the apartment. That's the murder they're after him for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it makes sense that the cops are after him. And
No, they're after him because of his girlfriend's... That's the boyfriend.
Yeah, they originally think that he killed the girlfriend.
That's right.
But he does kill the
oh, he
the
kills lots of people.
Yes.
There.
Yeah. But yeah. So they're not after they're after him for the crime that happens in that apartment. It's independent of the crime that he's supposedly committed when he killed DeFranco.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's the point I thought you were trying to make is that they never do set him up as a patsy. They get on him through something that actually does happen.
Yeah.
Right. That he is actually partially responsible for.
Yeah.
Because he does kill that agent.
Yeah, and I hated the diehard reason. Oh, it's all about fucking money. Just hated it.
But at that time, it was all about money.
I mean, that was film. Every action movie in the 80s was driven all about by money. Money, yeah.
You know, look at Eddie Murphy's movie, I mean, from the 80s, that was the Beverly Hills Cop. What was it about? Money.
Die Hard,
about money.
Yeah.
You know, all these movies... With characters.
Lethal Weapon, Cougar Lands.
Yeah. Yes. But why do people commit crimes?
Usually for selfish gain.
Yeah.
And I think we could at least come up with a new idea that equals the complexity of the overcomplexity of a simple plot that this movie has. And at least I think we can come up with something that at least justifies that complexity.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, the other thing to consider too is the director who did this had never done an action film.
No, he hadn't.
Yeah, and this really isn't an action film. It has action, but it's not. It's a thriller. It's a thriller. It's supposed to be a mystery, but that's really clumsily handled, and I'll agree with you on that, that is really poorly handled as far as the mystery as to why Raleigh's been set up.
On this watch in particular, it's been a long time since I watched it, but then I'm like, wow, this is really dumb. Like, there's a lot to be thrilled about when you're watching it, but when it all starts coalescing into the story that you're just the motivations that of what's going on and are finally revealed, you're like, well, that's fucking dumb.
Yeah, it's like they had a beginning and an end and they kind of just wrote something to fill the middle out to get you to the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so really bugged me. I'm going to run the trailer here, and then we're going to really deep dive into this.
Raleigh Tyler is an FX man, the movie's master of make-believe. He can show you 1,000 ways to die.
Hey, Doc! Great special effects!
But now somebody wants Raleigh Tyler to do it for real.
We want to stage a fake assassination, Raleigh, and we want you to supervise it.
Who's the we?
Justice Department.
I'm a special effects man. I deal in make-believe. I'd like to keep it like that.
We just thought that we might be able to utilize your particular genius to help us out.
And what if someone takes a shot at me?
You are 100% protected. I give you my word.
That job that guy wanted me to do? I think I'll do it.
Someone else is writing the script and casting him as the killer.
I haven't done anything.
What if he put in real bullets?
If one person suspects.
Sorry, Raleigh. No loose ends.
This is up to something. He tried to kill me.
You go directly to the newspapers.
What makes you think they'd believe me?
I believe you.
My name is Leo. We need to talk.
Where the hell are you, Tyler?
He's going to need every trick from every movie he's ever made.
Remember my particular genius.
Just to get even. And get out alive.
I'm in pursuit of a blue step van. Letters on the side. X as in Frank, X as in X-ray.
Remember Skidball Express?
I sure do!
Mail!
But Raleigh Tyler's most special effects are yet to come.
Forget why you hired me.
What next?
At the next corner, send Nelly in.
Oh my God, what?
Is he the weapon or the victim? Is it murder or is it FX?
All right, that was the trailer for FX, 1986, directed by Robert Mandel, who directed The Substitute, and that was probably one of his better directions. We might do that one day. I really like The Substitute.
As do I. I actually rewatched it about a month ago.
There you go.
It's actually three of us that love that movie.
All right. Maybe we'll have you back for The Substitute.
Hey, you never know.
The movie was written by Robert T. Meginson, who did a movie called Pelvis. Gregory Fleeman was also the writer on this and was exclusively writing stuff for FX. He wrote the sequel FX2 and the television series as well. This movie was budgeted at $10 million.
That's cheap in comparison to today's standards.
Oh, yeah. It's
even cheap for then.
It's pretty cheap for 86. Grossed $20.6 million. So, I mean, not bad for... Orion, who was probably in desperate need of some kind of cash flow, so
yeah.
It doubled its money, and they probably didn't dump a shit ton into advertising, so they made a sequel, so they obviously made some money. But I'm guessing the sequel was probably after Orion's collapse, because Sony picked up, I think, Orion and TriStar, along with MGM, and...
I believe you're right about that. And yeah. The second one was not nearly as strong as the first one in terms of the originality of the idea. Mm-hmm. Take somebody from, you know, the FX world and then move them into this plot.
Well, I meant to watch a sequel because I'm like, well, okay. He just set up the murder. Well, he raided this witness protection, the home of Colonel Mason, to kind of get revenge for all of this nonsense. I don't even think at the time he even knew DeFranco was alive.
No, I don't think he did.
And sets it all up. It's really just kind of working out of his van and MacGyvering up the situation and manipulating these people into kind of killing themselves, and then makes it look like he died as well. Then him and the detective retrieve the money in Geneva. So... technically, everybody's on the lam. So, what's the sequel? So, I couldn't remember anything about the sequel, and I never got a chance to watch it over the week to see where it went next.
Cause... yeah, I do remember only that Dennehy reaches out to Raleigh or to Brian Brown's character at the start of the sequel, but I don't remember the rest of the plot. I just remember one scene with a pool ball knocking somebody out because it pops up from the thing. It was cheesy.
I remember a clown.
There was a lot of cheese in the second one over the first one. I think what attracted me the first one most was the fact that you had all of these obscure references that in today's society, if they remade that movie today, there would be actual pop culture references. And this was referencing pop culture in a fantasy way or a fiction way?
No, well, it's the movie does reference all these other real-life movies, but they're all grindhouse movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the one that kept popping up was I Dismember Mama, which was a 1972 movie, which was originally called Poor Albert and Little Annie, and he does have the poster on the wall of that. And I actually ran the trailer for that during Cult Movie A Go-Go back in January, so go check it out, because I was thrilled when that popped up, and I'm like, oh my god, I just remember Mama. Nobody knows what that is. Why are they referencing it, and why does everybody in this world know what it is?
Yes,
because it was not a hit.
No, it's funny because yeah, every time somebody sees that particular prop, they're like, oh, I just remember Mama.
I'm like, yes, everybody knows that prop because in that world, that was huge. There were no diehards. There were no Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street, but I just remember Mama, huge franchise.
It's probably the one they can get the rights to mention.
Probably.
Well, you're that low budget. Yeah. It's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Okay, this movie stars Brian Brown as Roland Raleigh Tyler, Brian Dennehy as Lieutenant Leo McCarthy. We talked about Brian Dennehy in episode 120, Assault on Precinct 13.
Great movie.
Yeah, go check that out. Diane Venora played the actress character of Ellen. She's been in some good stuff. She was in Wolfen, which I kind of want to do for the show at some point, and Heat.
Yes.
Which in itself is a remake of L.A. Takedown.
Yep.
Yep.
There you go. Mason Adams was Colonel Mason. I guess they couldn't even be bothered to come up with a new name for him.
Either that or he's forgetful.
Yeah, well, he's probably most remembered for being Lou Grant. Or being in Lou Grant.
Yeah, being in Lou Grant. Yeah.
He's been in tons of stuff. He's one of those guys you just see and you're like, oh, I know him from that thing in that 80s thing.
Yes.
So, you know, you'll recognize him. Cliff DeYoung was Martin Lipton, and he's another one of those 80s, you know him if you saw him kind of guys. He was in The Craft and Glory, so he's been some good stuff. Jerry Orbach, we've talked about before. Most people would recognize him from Law and Order.
Yes, he had a very extensive Law and Order career.
Very extensive, but we talked about him briefly in episode 150.
Beauty and the Beast.
Considering he came from Law and Order, that's a weird one.
Yeah, and he played Lumiere.
Yeah. That's one
wow.
of those.
I don't even think I even saw that.
Well, I mean, it's animated. You're supposed to be into the character, not who the voice.
Oh, you're talking about the Disney one.
Yeah. Well, they're both Disney ones.
Yeah. I think I saw the Disney, but I didn't recognize that he was the voice of Lemire.
Yeah.
He was the voice in the live action remake, was he not?
Yeah, it was a live action one. So crazy, but considering it wasn't even that long ago for us, yeah. I didn't remember that. Also from Law and Order was Joe Grafasi, who played Mickey, and he's also in a movie called Bull. Martha Gehm was Andy, the sidekick to Brian Brown. And we've seen her in Father of the Bride and Practical Magic, some pretty good movies considering how terrible she was in this film.
She's fucking horrible in this.
She's underused in this movie, too.
Well, there's a reason, because she can't deliver dialogue.
Well, she, you know,
but was that direction or was that acting?
I'm going to say, given that she's been in some better stuff, I'm going to say there was some piss poor directing on
that. That's what
I think her direction was, you're a PA, be a PA.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, every PA that's ever worked on films, and we know that, you and I, mm-hmm. from having worked on films,
yes,
that they all want to be in that director's chair, but you're a PA, go get me a coffee.
Yeah.
So, and that's, I think that was her direction. And you know, well, every PA walks around with her head down.
I got the feeling, well,
I thought she was like a protege.
Yeah, I thought she was kind of a partner in crime in this, as far as, you know, preparing the props and that sort of thing. Yeah. I think, and that's kind of where I want to go, is concentrate more on that, and maybe that he's got an entire special effects team. It's usually not just a couple of guys.
She would be like the prop master's assistant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that. So that's kind of where I want to go with her. I have to mention Captain Jake Wallinger in this movie, played by Roscoe Orman. And everybody knows him from, oh God, children? Sesame Street. He's one of the few non-puppets.
Oh, I recognize him, but I couldn't figure out where I knew him from.
Yeah, Sesame Street. Years and years of Sesame Street. Awesome. Trey Wilson was Lieutenant Murdoch. He was in Bull Durham. Tom Noonan just keeps turning up for us.
Yeah.
Tom Noonan, we talked about in episode 99.
That was Manhunter.
That's right. And episode 178, fairly recently.
Last Action Hero.
Yeah, so he's starting to... I was surprised when I saw him in this, because this is the same year as Manhunter, where he is the bad guy in that film. And in this one is just a B character.
He's just a flunky.
I think he's got one bit of dialogue.
Two. I was counting.
We don't even actually see him. You can hear it, but you don't actually see him say it.
Yeah. You can recognize the voice right away.
Yeah, you're familiar totally with
him. You recognize that voice. But yeah, when I was watching, I'm like, hey, shit, that's Tom Noonan. Cool, connection. And I'm like, I hope he has dialogue. And then right near the end of the movie, I got the dialogue. I'm like, okay.
Paul D'Amato was Gallagher, and I just wanted to mention, because there's a connection there, it's a Slapshot and Magnum Force, two movies that we may or may not cover, because Magnum Force would be a good one, though.
Yeah, it would be.
And, of course, we've already mentioned Angela Bassett and our connection to Strange Days as well. So that rounds out our cast of FX. Now let's dive into this freaking movie that is fairly well reviewed, I gotta say. IMDb 6.7 out of 10, and Rotten Tomatoes gave it an 88% critic score, but only a 52% audience score. So the audience, Rotten Tomatoes came later, so the audience score is coming from more of a modern audience who's really seeing the plot holes in this movie. And I think maybe that's probably a more accurate rating by today's standards, with a more complex way of telling stories in modern movies.
I think that you're probably right. That has a lot to do with it. And the fact that, let's face it, everything about this film, as far as the effects go, is pretty dated. They're really well done for the time. There's no question that they're really well done for the time. The problem is a lot of audiences don't relate to practical effects the way they used to.
Yeah, and practical effects, it's starting to make a comeback, but I kind of like the idea of, if we set this in a modern setting, this is a guy who's just kind of making ends meet because he's jumping from lower budget stuff to lower budget stuff, because most modern effects now are kind of being done digitally.
Yes.
So I like the idea that he's a little more grounded, not super, super Hollywood. He's kind of working on what is considered an antiquated way of doing things.
That leads into the way I want to remake the opening scene.
Yeah.
That opening scene bugs the hell out of me.
Yeah.
It's so terrible. Just all the way across the board.
Let's make it a horror scene, because when I think about where those kind of practical effects are being used, we're seeing it on like Walking Dead and Game of Thrones and fairly well-made big budget television series, or in some cases smaller budget films. Horror still likes using practical effects for the most part.
Well, it's because they're cheap now.
Yeah.
They're cheaper, and they look so much better than a digital effect when it comes to horror.
I agree 100% on that.
I hated when there was, in the early 2000s, when they went to kind of, instead of from squibs and the blood effects from the squibs when people are getting shot, to doing it digitally, because it just looks like a fucking cartoon.
Piranha is a great example. Yeah. 3D is a great example of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I want this to be a Bruce Campbell B film. I want a Bruce Campbell cameo at the beginning. Because you remember all those B films he did in like the 90s?
Yeah.
I would love to see like something like that happening in the opening scene.
Yeah. Right. I did kind of envision this like as still a lower budget action film that's building stars rather than using them. Although I do have a couple of stars in my casting, mainly because like if you're dating an actress, it should be a recognizable one.
Yes. And yeah. I when I was doing my casting, I was thinking the same
and
kind of thing.
And that's kind of where I went. I went with more recognizable actors that were in acting positions within the film. In the film.
I've got my two tops for that, but I'll save that for
later. Yeah, no, we'll definitely save that for later. I can't wait to hear your recast. We never did that on our old shows.
No, we never did do that on our old show.
Yeah.
You know, as far as this film goes, for the time, it stood out amongst all the other schlock that was coming out at the time, because it almost had a unique premise with the effects guy coming in to do this supposed murder or hit. And it's not something we'd really seen up until that point. I mean, we'd seen movies like The Invisible Man and things along that line
this
that used some effects.
A combination of like MacGyver and Mission Impossible.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, exactly.
In a lot of ways.
And that device is actually quite plausible. Like, you can see that, like that part works. Right,
I love the idea of this guy with the effects thing, and he's trying to manipulate
a real situation
by creating a different narrative within that situation and making people think, like, you know, the car chase when he throws the dummy out and the cop stops thinking he's running over a civilian.
Yeah. He's running over a corpse or something. Yeah.
But he's not, like, initially he's pretty shell-shocked from the whole experience of the government guys trying to kill him after he's done what they've asked and trusted them, and he thinks he's serving his country. He's pretty shell-shocked initially, but he gets over it because, man, he's pretty vicious when he's trying to get to the bottom of what's going on.
Well, he's Australian. Of course he is.
You know, that was a penal colony.
True. I loved when he stuffed the guy in the trunk and just started playing Demolition Derby in the car.
And that was
until the guy started talking.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this is brutal. It's a good thing this is 80s cars when they were built. Built to take some hits.
Yeah. Like, there are some really great parts of this film. And I think that's why I still enjoy it more than you did, obviously. But
I enjoyed it. The plot was dumb.
The plot does fall apart. Like, they came up, like I said, they came up with a great device at the beginning, and they had an ending for it, and the rest they just kind of tried together with bits and pieces of dialogue.
It became a bit of a survival film for the most part. You know, he's on the lam, he's hiding, and he's trying to discover what's going on, and not really ever succeeding. He really just, the only thing he succeeds is climbing up the ladder to the man he most trusted within the government to confront him.
Yeah, I mean,
and then it turns into a revenge plot.
It does turn into a revenge plot, definitely. Well, yeah, I know it totally does, because the crazy glue with the gun, that is totally revenge.
Oh, I mean, that's completely premeditated.
Yeah.
He, at that point, he made a distinct decision that you're going to die via cop.
I think for me, though, the friendship that he builds with Dennehy's character.
But he doesn't. At no point does he build a friendship with him.
No.
By the end of the film, he sure does.
They never interact until the last that last scene.
It was baffling that they went together. But by that point, Dennehy had been fired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had impersonated his own boss, so he was screwed.
Yes.
You know, he was going to be living a civilian life anyway, so this $15 million, which doesn't seem a whole hell of a lot now.
But
this safety deposit box key for in Geneva suddenly, and he kind of pieced together what the cop had pieced together, that Brian Brown's Raleigh really was being manipulated during this. He didn't really fully understand why, but yeah, by the end of the movie they're buddy and splitting I won't report you if you don't report me.
Yeah, well, that's where most good friendships are built.
That's right. 7.5 each. Yeah, that's not nothing to sneeze at.
No, I wouldn't sneeze at it now even.
No.
But yeah, that was one of the things that jarred me, is the fact that they do become quite friendly, even though they never actually interact with each other at any point until that very end when Denny says, yeah, I know you're not dead and you're going to help me get this money.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I liked about their dynamic, though, is that it does build because they do have some not direct interaction, but they do kind of sort of leave clues for one another what's going on throughout this film until they finally get to the end and they become these great friends over $15 million. But I think that it was something that once they figured out that, okay, you're not after me for this and I'm not chasing you for that.
Yeah, Denny, he's using the back door of this murder investigation to get back into an old one, that a case that isn't being put into back into his hands because he's smelling foul on this murder of DeFranco, this Italian mob boss, which I guess we might have to change. In mine, I made him Russian because the Italian mob doesn't really exist anymore. not nearly to the extent it used to be in the 80s, right. Anyway. So I've changed it to the Russians. But really, they're kind of minor anyway. Like, the whole thing of trying to use this guy to take down an organization doesn't really exist. So, like, the mob hook is just another one of these false things in the movie to kind of get you from point A to point B, but doesn't matter.
Yeah. That's why I was thinking change it to the Treasury Department, and he's actually, like, in the financial world.
I was thinking CIA. Believe it or not, the special effects guy, John Steers, he claims that after this film, the government did approach him to simulate some of the things that were in the film. And that was interesting, because that was kind of what I was thinking that the way I'd want to go in this movie, where it's not initially, they're not initially saying, well, we want you to do this for us. We want you to teach us how to do black ops type operations. They're not going to say it's black ops operations, but they want to figure out how to do these Mission Impossible special effects type of thing to make others think that they've done one thing while they've done something else. Okay, we've kidnapped this guy but made it look like he's been killed instead, some insurgents or whatever. We can make this a more political bent. And in which case the Fall Guy Patsy thing would work better into the film itself, because if you've taken out a high profile target and you can lay the blame on this dude.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
To some degree. I think what kills me about it, though, is the makeup effects from, you know, 86 to now have drastically changed. And in 86, when if you were on a set and you saw somebody in prosthetic makeup, you would know it was prosthetic makeup because there's very easy tells. In this movie, they sort of skirt around that by saying, no, we can make you look exactly like you want to look. And at that time, the technology still wasn't really there.
Well, you know, I used to date a special effects makeup artist, and she would do cuts and stuff. Sam and I have both gone through the process, and then we would just walk the streets and watch people's meltdowns. And it was, I mean, and this was very traditional, tried and true type stuff. If you're not on a movie set and your first casual glance, that's what you're going to think. Oh, that guy's got a fucking slash across his forehead or whatever.
Or third-degree burns.
Third-degree burns like we did. They're only going to see what their initial thought is. And, when he's doing the disguise stuff, long hair, mustache, they're fairly easy stuff. And all you're going to see is the long hair and the mustache. And that's really all we need. But, you know, he's good at this. So that's one of those things that should be a bigger aspect of this. I mean, really, this would turn into an alternative franchise to Mission Impossible in a lot of respects and rely on those special effects trickery by showing you that's what it is.
Yes.
Doing a more realistic way, whereas Mission Impossible, they've created technology that doesn't exist, whereas this one used the stuff that's there. And, like, 3D printing has become a long, long way.
Absolutely, it has.
And they can 3D print metal and plastics. And
a wide range of plastics now. Yeah. I mean, even 10 years ago, when 3D printing was really in its infancy, much like makeup effects were still in their sort of mid-stage in the 80s, you were dealing with only a handful of plastics, maybe three, two tops, I think, and that would have been ABS and PLA. And anybody who knows what ABS is, it's probably running throughout most modern homes now as plumbing pipe. But PLA now being the more popular because it's biodegradable, made from cornstarch, that's something they're even making props on movie sets with. I see more and more 3D printing showing up in props and effects for movie sets than I ever saw even 2 years ago.
Yeah. No, I mean, this guy would have a much bigger prop making studio. It wouldn't all just be out of the back of a small truck like he's got. Right.
Yeah, no, and it wouldn't have been even back then, to be honest.
Yeah, and even then, yeah, he would have had a much bigger trailer and stuff. Yeah. They might have had a small truck like that as well
for on set.
But, yeah, that, I mean, honestly, that was there so they'd have something convenient but could still do a car chase.
Yeah.
But it was really odd when he was making the effects for the initial crime that he was going to commit. They even show him a very small area. I think he does that in his apartment.
Yeah, and that's something that we need to change. Like, this guy's working films, and he's working low-budget and big-budget films. Yeah. So, I mean, I've known special effects guys in the past, and they've got big areas, and they work with other people. It's usually not just one guy. I mean, it can be if it's a smaller film, but if it's a bigger film, there's usually a team.
Yeah,
yeah. There almost has to be, just because there's people, set up,
and even then, it's a lot of the times, even if you're working by yourself, it's shared studio space.
Yeah, exactly.
So they got a big warehouse and it's full of props and stuff.
But yeah, I love the idea of bringing the 3D printing in, just because there's one thing that really bothers me. One of many things that bother me about this film, but one that really bothered me is the end scene where he's dressed up as DeFranco after smashing the bust. Right, so how does he recreate that makeup?
He had negatives and stuff. I mean, the initial bust, that was the final mold. We actually watched the stages, so if he still had the negatives, he could have bought another one.
He could have bought another one. Yeah, and that's kind of where I wanted to go with this, is with the 3D printing. He can destroy the bust, but he's still got all the records, so he can reprint it.
I actually liked watching that, because I'm like, yep, that's how you do it. That's how you would do it in the old
days. Yeah, but he would have still had to do a negative mold of Brian Dennehy's character in order to make that facial prosthetic fit.
Well, DeFranco, not Dennehy. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's why that scene is great. Like I said, I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. But the way that they sort of make sure you destroy everything, get the negatives, all that stuff, right? They left you with the impression that they had successfully destroyed everything that would have allowed him to recreate that.
Well, I don't. Right? The only thing,
and I'd like to just address how that.
He
did it.
The only thing they smashed was the bust.
Yeah.
They obviously weren't thinking, and it would have made more sense if we did still see the negative at some point.
That's what I mean. But the 3D printing would allow it.
These days, you could just do a 3D scan.
Yeah.
Without having to make that mold.
Yeah.
I mean, you could still do it the old-fashioned way, and I think that's still the best way do it. But, I mean, he could have easily done, 3D scan of the guy, then done the traditional, smash that stuff, but he's still got all that shit saved in his computer.
That's right. It addresses that small. It's a small hole, but it bugged me a lot.
But if the movie had just shown us he still had the negative,
would have fixed the hole
to pour the new mold.
Would fix that. It
wouldn't have been a problem. Yeah. But yeah, that was a big plot hole for sure.
Yeah.
Well, the other side of that was he still had pictures of DeFranco.
No, they destroyed those, though.
They took the negatives.
Yeah.
That was something they did.
Yeah, he burned the photos.
Did they take all the 8x10s, too?
Yeah.
I don't remember them doing that.
Yeah, there's a scene where Lipton's taking them all off the bulletin board.
Oh, right, right. You're right.
Yeah. But
because I was going to say, he could have probably recreated it from clay, but...
But yeah, I think that that 3D scan where they destroy everything else, but they forget about this 3D scan, or he conveniently forgets to mention it, would allow us to fix that. It's really small and minor, but it bugged me because they made such a point of showing how they destroyed everything.
Yeah. No, definitely. I thought that was an awkward scene. But yeah, when we got the 3D printing, we can print more masks, and he'd have lots of stuff on file, too, to constantly change his look while he's being chased and whatnot. So he could be standing right behind some dude, and they probably wouldn't even notice. I'd love to have that where he's just playing with people.
I think that would bring a lot more fun into it, because they tried. They tried really hard to bring sort of a sense of humor and fun into this very dramatically charged story. But it rarely worked very well.
It was kind of flat, the humor.
Yeah. And part of that was the some of the acting was not particularly solid. And again, I think I blame that more on the director than I do on the actors.
Yeah, no, there were definitely some angles I didn't like. There was one early on in Raleigh's apartment, which it might have been just the way his apartment was because it was more of a studio where you could see above the wall. And that made it look like a set to me. There were just, yeah, there were some angles and that I didn't like. And it was almost very traditional, quick TV. I bet you this was shot really fast. 3 weeks, I'm guessing.
You know, when you say the layout of his apartment and those walls, those were very prevalent in, you know, bohemian sort of apartments at that time because those walls couldn't go to the ceiling because the ceilings were 12 and 13 feet high.
Mm.
So they would make essentially a large pony wall to divide up a space that used to be a warehouse or used to be some sort of manufacturing facility at one time. And you got to remember, a lot of these buildings were built back in the early 18 or early 1900s that have survived through, because they're in Chicago, if I'm not mistaken.
I thought they were New York.
Are they in New York or Chicago? I thought it was Chicago.
I'm not sure. Didn't write it down. The one note.
But still, the buildings are, you know, they've been renovated into living spaces and working spaces. And a lot of these makeup artists
I can
at
forgive,
that time.
I can definitely forgive that, but there were lots of clumsy shots within this film where they could have got a little more creative with the camera, but didn't. So I think it just came down to the inexperience of the director at the time.
Particularly with this particular genre of film, right?
And I mean, his resume doesn't scream like high quality through most of his career. Yeah. A lot of TV and a lot of TV you don't even know what it is. A lot of movies you've never heard of. So lots of direct-to-videos and I think TV movies and that sort of thing.
Yeah, this might be his most successful film.
For sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By far.
By far. One of his most successful.
I think when you start getting, when you start pulling from that TV sort of pool, you're going to get that same TV kind of quality because they're looking at shots not like as a big cinematic experience, but what is this going to look like on the small screen?
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is a drawback. I mean, you really have to learn that film part, not just that TV part, if
these
you
days,
want to make a big film.
These days, you look at successful TV shows, there's a lot of successful film directors that are directing episodes now.
Well, yeah, because with new television technology, you want to make sure that you can almost get that cinematic experience from a regular TV series if it's shot well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, when you think about TVs that are screens that are getting up to 80, 90 inches now, possibly even larger, for all I know, because I don't follow the technology. But even the screen that I have at my own home, it's big enough that when it's something shot for TV, it's very noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's almost less enjoyable because of that.
A great example of that is, and I hate to say this, is Winona Earp, if anybody has seen that television show.
I'm aware of it.
Yeah.
It's shot very poorly here in Alberta.
Yeah,
and it looks like a B-budget kind
of... The first season, absolutely. I think once you get into the second, third seasons, they've kind of found their way.
I haven't seen the second season yet.
Yeah, but yeah, it does start looking better. The further they progress, the better it starts to look.
Gotcha. Yeah, they were taking this obscure comic book property and trying to... Again, I think that was made for syndication rather than a particular network. It was probably like Sci-Fi.
It was Sci-Fi, yeah.
Yeah. And Sci-Fi sometimes, well, yeah, you look at some of their stuff and it's dubious. Yeah.
It's hit and miss.
They're going for cheesy fun, and I think initially that's what that show started out as. But I don't know. I haven't seen an episode, so I can't judge.
And, you know, getting back to FX being originally produced as a television pilot.
It makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense the way that it was shot, absolutely. Yeah. And then Orion stepping in and saying, look, let's just put it on the big screen. Let's see how much money we can make.
Yeah.
We need some money, so let's see how much money
we can make. Yeah, well, they actually were able to put a little bit more money behind it because of it. Because, I mean, if this was a pilot, it would have been $500,000.
And in 1986,
that would have been a lot.
This sort of idea of a makeup guy becoming this, for lack of a better word, secret agent?
Yeah. By the end of this, he kind of is. And that's kind of where the franchise goes, even though it's more... more secret agent for hire detective kind of stuff. Well, that's where Danny He, I think if memory serves, that's kind of where the sequel and the TV series went. You know, he'd partnered up with the detective and he would do all the kind of sneaky effects work to manipulate the scene to what the whatever their motivation was at the time.
That's essentially what I remember as well, yeah.
Yeah. And it's a good conceit. I mean, it's still something I think that would work really well today, especially with modern effects. And you look at the stuff that you see on Walking Dead, that's almost all practical. And the techniques are still there, and it's still good, and it still looks great. If anything, I think that looks better than anything CG can do. Well, that's not true. The CG's come a long way.
It has, but I mean, this is one of those things that we talk about frequently is practical versus CG versus a combination of both.
Yeah. And that could be the biggest change in here where somebody, they've branched their beginning of this film, maybe they are branching into computer generated special effects along with the practical side of their business. So now, that's why I kind of wanted him to have a team of people.
Yes.
So if things get more complex, you've got somebody who can hack a new computer, create whatever they want, digitally create a scene if they need to, like say he's caught on cameras and they've re-edited the actual camera footage to show what they want to show.
And that's a common trope in a lot of these mm-hmm. types of movies is where, you know, big governments changing the footage to suit mm-hmm. them.
And that'd be fun to turn it up, turn it around and have it being done to them.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that, actually. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, what the technology we just saw, I think, from the Apple showcase last year, or maybe it was Google, and there was a complete digital assistant making a phone call for pizza, sounding like a natural person.
Yeah.
Scheduling times and whatnot, and we've even seen that they can sample voice samples and create entirely new conversations with voice samples. It's really scary.
It is a little bit scary. Yep. And it's not technically available yet, but it is developed. Mm-hmm. Is this super thing,
it exists,
yeah, roll up yeah. glass that you can project, that you can use as a like an actual screen. Mm-hmm. You can use that to replace that mirror scene,
yeah,
right?
Because yeah, well, we've actually seen a Mission Impossible take a similar
yeah.
idea with this kind of roll-up LED screen of this hallway that they were filming and projecting on the screen and then pushing forward. Was that the fourth one?
Fourth
Mission
one,
Impossible.
Yeah.
That comes straight from FX.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what they just did, except it was more of that a mirror thing yeah. that he had done. And I'm surprised the guy didn't notice right away when you're shooting at it that it was kind of warbling. Yeah. But the thing that really dazzled me is it ricocheted bullets.
MI6 or yeah, Mission Impossible.
I'm like, wait a minute, this thing is like really thin enough to be rolled up but can ricochet bullets back at the guy shooting at it. What the fuck is that stuff?
And where do I get some?
That was probably one of the more implausible things that was done in the movie, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine Mythbusters taking on effects
mm-hmm.
and debunking the myths that are in that movie.
Yeah, and I love that a special effects guys that's what Mythbusters are. They're special effects guys that debunk all this stuff. But to debunk a movie called FX, I think, would be hilarious.
Yes.
I wish they'd do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too bad they're not doing the show anymore, because that would have been a good one. And maybe they did. We just haven't seen it.
Maybe. There's lots of episodes.
I don't think they did tackle FX.
I don't think they did either. By the time that show got popular, everybody'd forgotten about this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Long.
I mean, that's one of the reasons I wanted to do it, because it was kind of a minor franchise, but that nobody remembers. It's not on streaming services. You never see it replayed on television anymore. It's even hard to track down DVD and Blu-ray right. copies.
Right.
So, like, this is
but you still
a good
get
time
it from
to do
Google revival. Play.
Well, there you go.
you can get it on your Google
Play.
It's
still available on services. I know you could
but you do
buy
have to
it
look
on,
for it. You do have to look for it.
Yeah, you could rent it on YouTube and stuff as well. So it's a little difficult to track down, but it's out there.
But it is something you have to actively look for, and unless it's in your mind.
Yeah.
And I mean, when you said, well, let's do this, I'm like, I hadn't thought about that movie in years.
Yeah. And that's just it. It's kind of been forgotten now. To remake this, like I said, I wanted to give it more of a political slant, and we could see him being brought in to recreate something that he's already done for television for the government, who uses it for nefarious purposes. This isn't a offshoot, a black ops scenario, off the books type of operation. And when it goes south, they try to make Raleigh the patsy.
And I like the idea of them trying to kill him first and then having to sort of think on their feet and then make him the patsy. Right. Because they don't want, obviously don't want it to get out that he's responsible for what, or that he's responsible for a special effect that, for this particular operation that they're doing. But yeah, I could see that. I'd like to turn it from we have to kill him to get to hide his involvement, to sort of becoming that thing is, this is a shoot on site situation. Right, so that the police are aware that he's wanted, rather than setting up that whole scene where at that loft apartment where he's where his girlfriend dies and they
try to kill him after the fact.
Yeah.
I mean, kill him during the act.
Yeah, CIA is more foreign operations. So what if this guy that they're trying to set up to pull in is like, because I said I wanted to go Russian on this. He is a Russian mobster who's got ties to the Russian government. So he's a high interest target, so they could get intel within the higher up in the Russian government.
We've kind of seen that a couple of times, in The Saint, with Val Kilmer.
I completely forgot about that movie.
Because he does kind of the same thing where he makes up his face and plays different characters.
FX isn't a new idea.
No, but I think that if you're going to do that, you have to charge it politically with what's going on in the world today, and where's our biggest
issues?
Well,
we could certainly move it to the Middle East.
Yeah, I think would work better than Russia, because of everything that's... I mean, the Cold War is over, and we may be in for another one.
If they're going to do it in Russia, they're just looking for stained sheets.
Yeah. There you go.
I don't know what that means.
I would probably set it in the Middle East if I was going to redo this movie, and again, still politically charged with the CIA, and bring in characters that are relevant today, and utilizing the technologies that are available today. I mean, makeup effects are so much better now than they were in 86, now that you're using silicones and things like that, as opposed to
latex,
heavy latex,
rubber.
I mean, I like where you're going with that, but my biggest concern is once you start getting global, it does make it...
But no, we're keeping the central conceit. Like, he's still there to bring in a high profile asset, but he's not being brought in on the major operation. He's just there for this guy that they're trying to pull in. And maybe, I hate to learn that this is money driven again, but it is a off the books black ops operation, and they want to take him out because he's the only civilian outside of the circle that knows that this operation is happening, and that would be bad. I mean, we could feasibly bring it into, there's a gold cachet, and then they go, oh.
Yeah.
and we can bring it back around to money.
I mean, greed is always a great motivator for these types of things, but you have to make it work well. And that's what they didn't do in this movie.
No.
Right. I like the idea of going political versus criminal. But the only thing is if you want to get into set up sort of a mole into another government, faking his death doesn't work. There's a kind of, because if you fake his death, then all of a sudden he reappears.
You've taken the high asset target out. You're taking him out for intel. You're not going to release him back into the wild. Well,
but yeah, that's the thing is if he's dead, then
they didn't
release
DeFranco back into the wild.
No.
So I'm not sure what this conversation's about.
Well, yeah. They didn't release him back into the wild, but he was out there. I mean, he had the house.
Well, maybe I'm just not understanding.
That was Mason's house, not DeFranco.
Yeah, no, I know, but he was at that house.
Yeah.
But because maybe I'm understanding where the intel's coming from. Are they've gathered the intel from him and they're protecting him? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, we don't. I mean, we don't know how much info and how long that's going to take, right? Like, this movie takes place over just a few days.
Yes, it does. Yeah. No, what I'm saying is because the way you originally presented it is I understood that he was going to gather more information from him. From that, whatever government.
No, Raleigh.
You're your victim. Quote unquote. Right. Where, like, when you say intel, I was wondering where he was getting that intel. Was it intel he already had?
Yeah. Well, he's. Well, my initial thought was Russian mob, but it could be whatever.
Yeah.
ISIS, whatever.
Yeah.
Skimming off the top.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, they're bringing him in, he could be a legitimate bad guy not wanting to turn. They're taking him.
That would make more sense to
me. That was always my intention. The government is taking him so they can get more intel higher up the ladder because he's so close to it, this target.
But then you have to find a plot device for him to be able to do that. So what's the government doing to ensuring that he's going to give them the information?
And that's where maybe the trickery comes in, is to change the scenario rather than a torture scene or whatever, because God knows with that's topical as well.
It is topical
over the last few years. Yeah. Maybe they're trying to trick him in this high profile target to giving up the information. And that does feel very Mission Impossible, but that might be a good use of the special effects stuff.
Yeah,
rather than faking this guy's death.
That was the problem, is faking the death to get intel to seemed self-defeating, that's all.
Yeah, well, it didn't matter, because they were faking this fucking Italian dude's death for what? Like, they said they were going to use him as for witness protection because he was going to rat them up, but that was never the deal. Like,
no, it wasn't, but that was the device, right? Yeah. So
the deal was always
always so clumsy to me.
Yeah, and that's what you're trying to fix, and I certainly get that. But I like your idea of going, instead of faking his death, using the special effects to trick him into thinking something's happening that isn't really.
Yeah.
For him to end up in the hands of the CIA or FBI, whoever,
like,
you choose
family
to use.
Yeah. Or, you know, doing something digitally with family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, giving him an idea like, oh, they've got my family when they really don't.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, giving him this scenario in his head that if I don't cooperate with these guys, I'm going to lose what's most important to me.
I mean, that's fairly nefarious, and that would certainly give a dark angle to him the patsy. You know, I was thinking more along the lines of creating an entire scene where he's giving information up freely because he thinks he's talking to his superiors.
See, that's what could work really well too. But I like where Richard went with that, because then we can bring some of the modern CGI effects and computer effects into it too, right?
But we could actually manipulate that later on as well. But, you know, I want to pull it away from the Middle East setting fairly quickly as the CIA is trying to take him out.
And the Middle East setting completely fucks up my casting. So
mine too. Only the one. So mine.
The bad guy.
I mean, we're still working within the original conceit in this
movie.
This
also, bad guys are still the government.
This also makes McCarthy completely pointless.
Yeah, it does, and that is the other challenge, right?
Brian Dennehy's, like, so far doesn't exist in this.
You know what? Unless McCarthy is essentially completely pointless anyhow.
Yeah.
Right? He doesn't serve any real purpose in the movie, except for the end.
He's basically creating a mystery that
He's
already solved
everything.
Yeah, McCarthy's the cop, Brian Dennehy, and he's trying to solve a mystery that doesn't exist.
And the other aspect of that is it's kind of misdirection, right? So
yeah.
When you've set up your beginning,
I mean,
and
you
know
make,
where you're going, but you've got to get that filler in the middle.
Yeah.
What's a better way to do that than misdirecting the story?
I mean,
for
you
a
could
while.
Still have like an honest agent from a different agency who's investigating.
That's where you get
something.
An FBI agent in, because the CIA is not supposed to operate on American soil.
Yeah.
And then you have an FBI agent who's investigating it.
Yeah.
That fixes that hole.
Maybe there's something goes a little wrong, and that's where the FBI is brought in for investigation, because it does look like there's terrorist involvement on American soil. That's where the FBI would come in.
Yeah, exactly. So you have a reason for them to be there.
Yeah.
Right? And get rid of that whole, you're not supposed to be on this type of thing. He's on a parallel investigation with Raleigh, and that's how they kind of end up developing a relationship, whether they realize it or not, is they're both trying to reach the same goal.
I do like the idea that there's this relationship forming that they don't actually have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This parallel goal, and they don't really meet up in the end. Like, if we could just do away with the, we got a bunch of money, let's go party.
Yeah, you don't need that ending.
No, we'll get rid of that ending, because by that point, there's a cooperation that's formed right near the end, an understanding that can move you into a sequel without anybody sacrificing who they actually are.
Yeah.
You can maybe make a case that Raleigh has to stay dead and maybe operate outside of a truck that doesn't have your initials on it.
Pretty easy to find a big truck.
It depends on how we run that, because by the end of the original film, you know, he really can't come back.
That's true.
But does to
everybody? He's dead.
But does.
I think you're right about that. I mean, moving it to, you know, as instead of money being the motivator here, the exposure of the corruption that's going on, it would be a better motivator to getting these two guys that aren't friends.
Yeah. I mean, initially Raleigh can be brought in because it is a cash job.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that's where it could work really well, is where McCarthy helps Raleigh stay dead instead, helps him set up a new identity. And it says, and they have this thing saying, what the CIA had was a good idea, right? It's a shame that they used it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Right?
This is kind of what they, like, the real life situation of Argo, where they did try to create a false scenario of filming a movie as part of an operation.
And I think that sort of plot device could work here very well.
I think so, too.
Only you're introducing, again, modern effects and somebody who comes from that world as a... You know, sort of your leading man and character.
Yeah, and it's only when he's on the run where we can see more fantastical stuff, because he's got to make it look as real as possible in the initial operation that we're discussing of whatever they're faking to get this high-profile target. And then once he goes on the lam, it's go free reign. If he's trying to get out of the desert and go back home, or the operation happened at home, then it's...
Yeah, oh no, I see it to be done on American soil, because that's why the FBI has to be there.
Yeah, okay, I'm totally down with that. And so he could rig up all sorts of little stuff to keep them off his tail while he's trying to figure out how to survive and get the evidence he needs
to protect
himself and his family.
And get his name cleared.
Do we have a girlfriend that gets killed? To further motivate, he already had a lot of motivation, but her death kind of really angers him. He goes from fear to
I think it anchors more of his end motivation than anything else.
It never felt like he was really upset about it.
See, that's the other
that
thing.
That bothered me.
Yeah.
Oh, my girlfriend's dead. Oh, well.
They're all lovey-dovey, and then once she's dead, it's like, ah, crap.
There's plenty more actors in Hollywood.
I
got the feeling he was the Tuesday guy anyway.
Well, and they actually address that in the movie.
They do.
They actually address it in the movie, is that she kind of moves from guy to guy. Depending on what film she's working on.
Yeah.
Right? He just happened to be the current guy, and that's a very 80s conceit, is that when people are on film sets, they just kind of hook up and then they move on to the next film and it's over. Right, so I don't know if that's accurate for current film sets. I would suspect that some of that still happens.
I'm sure it still
happens.
I mean, it's tough when you, because you tend to date with where you work, and if you're constantly working with different people and stuff, I mean, it could be tough to maintain something.
Yeah, I think maybe what we would do is, we could do, instead of having the current partner, the partner flavor of the week, get killed, is maybe we turn that on its head and they freak out and say, you need to get out of here, I'm calling the cops right now, so get gone before they get here.
Well, I would have thought the death of a screen actress would have gained more attention. And
but I got the feeling that she wasn't a big name actress.
Yeah, but that's what I changed it to make.
Yeah. Well, of course.
The other thing that you can do with that, too, is instead of him, you know, hooking up with an actress, why not make it his team that he's built and has a relationship with that would be more meaningful to him than, you know, some actress that he's sleeping with for 3 weeks before she moves on to another.
Oh, sure.
I like that, because you know what? He goes to his partner, his actual business partner.
I would have been much happier if it had been Andy.
ditto. But yeah, he goes to his business partner for help, and his business partner's already dead because they're killing off all connections.
Right. Oh, that'd be good.
Right?
Again, screws up my casting, but that's fine.
Yeah, mine too. But that's okay. I think it works better.
Yeah.
And then that's when he goes to when he starts sort of reaching out to the rest of his team saying, you all need to get gone. We're going to meet here and we're going to figure out how to solve this. And then you have this whole team involved.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. I think it works a lot better than the wedged in relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So when I get to my casting and then I tell you about the actress, ignore it. I'm still going to tell you, but ignore it.
It's okay. My casting would still work as a business partner.
Well, it would and it wouldn't.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with it regardless.
Yeah.
Okay, we got any more ideas to throw at the wall here before we get into our casting?
I don't know. We should be writing this stuff down, putting this into a script. Come on.
If only we were recording this.
If only, yes.
If only. I mean, we get a new movie. Three of us.
Right there. We do this every second week.
And we know enough people in the industry between you and I.
That's true. Sam and I have written, I've co-written about 90 movies.
Yeah.
Sam's probably in the 70s.
Somewhere in the 70s, yeah.
Guessing. So.
Yeah. I'm an ideas guy, that's it.
Yes, we've come up with some, I think, some really great ideas.
We're a really good pitch men at this point.
Yeah. Somebody else can do the actual writing, but...
There you go.
Yeah. I could do the writing. Yeah. I like writing,
but
especially dialogue.
Let's talk about what we would keep from the original. Like some of the things that, like I love.
I want the smash 'em up car, throw the guy in the trunk thing.
Yes,
that was great. Yeah. Throw the guy in the trunk and then just drive the ass of the car into every object you can see until he squeals. I thought that was just like, oh, that is so brutal.
And so and it worked. It still worked.
Yeah,
I still like the idea of the chase scene with the van. To a certain extent, I think that using a slippery oil to cause an accident is kind of hackneyed.
No, that's very Spy Hunter video game.
Yes, yeah. Right. I still love the throwing the dummy out.
Yeah,
that needs to stay in, and maybe just that, right? Yeah. And maybe the chase scene can be a little bit shorter.
Yeah, I mean, if the guy suddenly stops, think he's going to run over grandma, and everybody piles into him on this. It was a fairly narrow road to begin with.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, that's right.
I mean, you don't really need the oil slick.
No, you don't. And you could have a little bit of fun with the effects with the van. Is they can somehow they use effects to completely change the way the van looks, right? I mean, that's pretty. I mean, that's spray paint.
That takes a lot of pre-planning.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
And that's
I think if you're on the run, that's the last thing you're going to do. I mean, using what you have available to you, like MacGyver would.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got. Fake cadavers in the back of your van. You've got body parts. You probably have some minor pyro back there.
Minor pyro. You've got lots of cabling, wiring.
Exactly. All this stuff
squibs,
you can use, right?
Blood effects usually are part of that kit. Lots of makeup stuff is always there. So, like, those are your basic things. And he uses that to great effect. Like, he uses a paint rolling rod to create a circuit to electrify
that
fence.
I want to keep that. Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of ingenuity I want to keep. It doesn't have to be that per se, but he uses simple techniques to electrify doorknobs and things like that for the targets where the place he's infiltrating, these people are taking out themselves because he's unarmed.
Yeah.
The remote control balloon has to go, though. Prop guns.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But that remote control balloon has to go, though.
That was dumb.
It was dumb. It was fucking dumb.
Although, I might have been okay with it, because think about what just happened in film. We had it.
Yeah.
And if it had been a red balloon, it would have been a nice nod to a different movie.
To pop culture again.
Yeah.
Right? But, yeah.
And it would have been creepy as fuck.
Yeah.
This balloon coming around and doing acting abnormal.
Yeah, and I think that's what you're supposed to get when you watch this movie is, like, what the fuck, right?
Well, the character should be at least, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, and he's kind of looking at it, but the thing is when it explodes, he, like, gasps like he's been gassed or poisoned somehow.
Yeah.
It makes no sense
that
whatsoever.
That doesn't make any sense. Right. Like, if that should have been a lure to something else.
Yes.
I agree.
Yeah, instead of this explosive thing with gas in it, because that takes a little too much planning. And
it goes back to what Richard was saying about they'd be working with what they have, right?
Yeah.
The other scene I really like is when the agent is coming into his flat for the first time and the monster comes out at him, the hydraulic monster.
Mm-hmm. I love that recurring joke.
Yeah.
That's a great joke. And I think that, again, is something that could work very well in this movie again. Maybe not at that beginning, but use that somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be
escape.
So big, because animatronics, the technology's just gotten a whole lot smaller to do it. So, and a lot more complex. So he could have some of that stuff in his studio and whatnot, because he does get a chance to get back there a couple of times before.
Yeah, and maybe you make it. Yeah, and you maybe make it his studio, not his apartment and his studio, right? So they.
No, yeah, I think his apartment.
That would,
doesn't
have that
sense.
As two separate locales.
Yeah. Yeah,
right, and yeah, the studio would be a showcase of his talents anyhow. Right?
Yeah,
especially when you come into the building, it's like here's all this stuff that we've done already. It's like a resume.
Yeah,
right. So it makes sense to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And you could have those fun pop culture references, like I Dismember Mama and all these other...
Yeah, maybe not that one. No.
But you know what I mean? Like some more modern...
Because everybody knows that movie. Yeah.
But you can pick from those B-grade horror movies, you know, like House at the End of the Lane,
I think every
stuff like that.
Special effects guy's done a zombie movie at this point.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So, you know, you could use some of that.
Yeah.
I mean, throw some...
Conjuring movies, all sorts of...
Throw some guts out the back of your van at a car and, you know, obscure the windshield or whatever.
Which would be funnier and would work better than a thing of oil.
Yeah. I mean, Jesus, I'm not into special effects, and up until a couple of years ago, I had a big jug of movie blood down in my basement, so...
You know, people are probably wondering on the other end, what do you have a jug of movie blood for?
It's given to me by my ex-special effects girlfriend.
That's always a nice gift to get. Here's a bucket of blood.
Who got it off the set of Dreamcatcher, which was shot here in Alberta, and then eventually I gave it to a pub who was doing a Halloween horror night. So,
gotcha. Yes. Yeah. So getting into, we've talked about the favorite things that we liked about this. And we kind of talked about what we didn't really and what we don't think really worked in this movie. Let's talk about some of the characters that I think were just there for the sake of filling screen. Well,
Ellen was one. Yeah. The relationship was definitely one.
Yeah. Yeah, Ellen for sure. You could say that about the police captain and stuff, but you're just kind of filling in the reality with some of these characters as well. You know, Danny has to answer to somebody else. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, they're extraneous, but they kind of have to be there to sell the rest of the world. So, I mean, they probably could have done away with it, and it probably wouldn't have changed the movie that much, but you kind of need these extraneous characters for sure. Ellen really is the only one that feels like a bit of a waste. Andy is useful, although he was poorly used. Yeah. He ditches her in the final moments. Now, this is where we came up with, we want to have a team, and for the most part, at least his second in charge of the team would probably be with him through most of this movie, and he
has a protege, personal assistant kind of person, and then he's got a partner
that shows
as well.
Trust instead of just going off and sacrificing their possibly sacrificing yourself and protecting your friends. I mean, I get what he was trying to do.
Sorry, you keep going.
I get what he was trying to do, but it did bug me that he just tossed her. Granted, she was a terrible actress, so get her off the fucking set.
But the whole team feeds in really well to covering up his death, to making it seem like he's really dead, too. Because he can have his team set up to do exactly what they did at the beginning of the movie, with rolling in the ambulance to take away his dead body.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good
idea.
That
would work much better as a plot device.
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't really dig that he kind of woke up in the morgue and had to go out the window.
Yeah. Right.
The other part of that would be that they can still be in the spotlight, or they can still be publicly known and still be out there with their boss just seemingly being dead.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right? That works so much better.
Yeah, and it kind of clears them too, right?
Yeah,
it
clears them, and then it gets him free to do things he needs to do. The only people who might think he's still alive would be these corrupt CIA guys.
Yep, that works for me.
Yeah, and the FBI is already closed in on them, because this is the final conflict at the end, right? Mm-hmm. Where he uses his abilities to bring them down, as it were.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100% on that. I think that would make for a much more entertaining movie, and I think it would make
tighter
for
ending.
A much more
believable.
Believable movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think you'd get invested in the relationships and the intrigue of this more than we did with the original effects. Even though I love the movie, I mean, that's what got me excited about doing, you know, home effects and learning how to do head casting and learning how to make prosthetics. And that was the movie that kind of cemented it for me in 86. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing stuff like that as a hobby, which led me to building props, which led me to working on films and television shows. But at the end of the day, I think that to set that in a modern aesthetic like we're talking about, and I think with what we've come up with, I think that would make for a great reboot of that franchise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love how it would bookend it too, right? If you have like an ambulance scene at the beginning and an ambulance scene at the end, there's sort of
It makes it come full circle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do like that.
But okay. Also leaves it open for sequels.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. All right, let's get into some recasting here. And now our movie's so different, which is great. My casting is still based on the old one. So, like, there's...
it usually is. Like, you don't have a choice until we talk it out.
Yeah, we didn't have it fleshed out. So there's additional characters that, geez, I don't even know who they're going to be now. I only really have the Andy character cast, but I do like the idea of a full team, and let's make it a multicultural one and make it a well-rounded and entertaining cast that works well together. I'll start this off, and then we'll get Richard in, and then we'll get Sam to finish off the effects recasting. All right, I'm going to start off with my director, and because this movie is effects, I wanted an effects guy to do this movie. And who better than Greg Nicotero, who's moved into not just doing special effects, but directing special effects shows. And he's worked on Walking Dead and directed many episodes, as well as made the effects for that show. And the upcoming reboot of Creepshow.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. No, I recognize his name as soon as you said it. I'm like, oh, that's a
yeah. Guy. With that, I went with Alex O'Loughlin as my Raleigh. He actually is an Aussie. He's currently on Hawaii 5-0. He's been in Whiteout and August Rush. And for the Lieutenant Leo McCarthy, the Brian Dennehy role, now that that's changed somewhat to an FBI role, but it still fits. I was thinking, I'm like, I didn't give Clayne Crawford a chance last time I tried to use him, and then I changed it to somebody else. Yeah. But now that I've learned more of that Lethal Weapon situation, I'm like, yes, you know what? Let's give you another chance. So I want you in that role. I think he'd be really good in that part.
I think so too.
Yeah, because just that angry cop role would be a little different now that we've recast it. But if he's FBI, he's going to need a haircut.
Yes.
Yeah, he would be. Yeah.
For my Andy, the next person in the special effects company, the protege, I went with Alicia Vikander from Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
A little younger, but yeah. I wanted somebody.
Younger in that role.
Yeah, and I wanted to keep the role female. And yeah, I liked somebody who could still do action parts as well. That wouldn't just be a damsel in distress, so we could give her some action sequences as well, because we're really beefing up that part in our remake. Initially, when we still had a movie star character of Ellen, I was thinking, because I wanted it to be a recognizable actress, I went with Zoe Saldana, who'd been behind a lot of makeup, like Avatar and Guardians of the Galaxy and Star Trek, and would be known for these big budget franchises. I mean, obviously we've changed that somewhat, so her character doesn't really exist anymore, but that's who I would have gone with.
Yeah. Well, and there's nothing saying that you can't put her into that partner role.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, right. That's the beauty of changing that is casting still works, right? But instead of casting her as the movie star, she's now just another member of the team who happens to be an actress that you've cast.
Yeah, which is fine. Yeah. So that's where that role is. For DeFranco, initially, like I said, I was thinking more Russian, so I would have probably changed his name to Alexei or something like that. But now we've gone
More Middle Eastern.
So this doesn't really work at all. But I had Roland Moeller, who was in Atomic Blonde and Skyscraper. He's a Swedish actor.
Okay.
So doesn't work anymore, but that's fine.
Well, it could. It doesn't. Just because we're taking things in the Middle East, it does not necessarily mean it has to be a Middle Eastern actor.
Okay.
It could be a Caucasian or
It's true.
Somebody who's actively working in the U.S. on behalf of these Middle Eastern.
That's true. Yeah. For Lipton, I went with Jamie Foxx. I wanted somebody that felt a little more established in the agency, because he felt kind of young to me. And I kind of like it when Jamie Foxx is a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give you that.
I'll give you that too, but that's not who I'd put in there. And my choice for that's going to be very different.
That's cool. I just wanted to change it up a little bit. And for my Colonel Mason, which I guess it could still be a colonel. I don't know. I went with Bryan Cranston.
Ooh,
great pick from Breaking Bad. Yeah,
that rounds out my cast.
Yeah, that's about all I cast too.
Those are the major players within the film.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think Nicotero is great for this movie. Mm-hmm. I think that if they were going to do a remake, he would be the go to guy for sure.
Yeah, if you're going to have somebody at least show running this, or if it turned into a series or whatever, but even as a movie, somebody who actually understands practical effects and could really sell that idea should be somebody who does it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My director's done a lot of directing with it, so you...
Sure. Yeah. They should have a lot of experience with it.
I think for Raleigh, as much as he's not an Aussie, but he's playing more serious roles as of late, is Jason Sudeikis.
Mm-hmm.
I think he could do very well in that role, because he can play the comedy, and he can play a very serious person in A Quiet Place. I don't know if either of you have seen that movie.
I have, yeah.
He does an amazing job in that film.
Yeah, for a guy who's known for comedy, but, you know, really could pull off a serious action horror role. And he's cut, too, so he really does have the action body.
Yeah. And I think
he which could, you don't think about when from his comedy roles. So. No.
Emotionally, I think he could do that character very well.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think,
and it doesn't have to be an Aussie.
No, right? I just kind of wanted to keep that in there, just because that's part of what I think made the character unique.
Yeah, my role is somebody not an Australian.
And this poor bastard always has to cover up his accent.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
the Andy, the assistant, I think Karen Gillan would be my choice for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, again, she's a person
associated with a lot of makeup through Guardians.
Yeah, she has. And she's also a character who can do the duality of emotion very well and not seem like she's just there to, you know, as a plot device to help him through his issues. I think she's a character who could make somebody who thinks on their feet very well.
Absolutely.
As far as the cop goes, Brian Dennehy's character, and I'm getting old, so I don't remember everybody's names anymore. I would probably put Denzel Washington in that role because he's a little older now. He's a little bit more mature.
I went with somebody younger, but yeah, though that I mean, I could totally see that working
because he'd
be
near the end of his career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, much like he's done with the Equalizer films recently, he kind of has that passive-aggressive character down very well.
Mm-hmm. I find that one interesting because, you know, FX was a movie franchise that went to television, and Equalizer is a television franchise that went to movies.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And I don't think it was done completely well because I love the television series. But moving on, I think as far as the Colonel goes, I think we're looking at, I was going to say Redford, but Redford's way too old for that. I think your other choices were very, very good as well. But I think for the Colonel, who was the guy who played Ross in the Avengers movie?
Tim Roth?
No.
John Hurt.
John Hurt.
Yeah.
I think John Hurt would do very well in that role.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. He's it's funny how some of these older 80s actors that were leads in dramas and thrillers and stuff are now all being made military guys.
Yeah.
But that happens, you know, and he's really good at it.
So. He is really good at it, yeah.
Very good. And as far as the mob boss, I would say Alexander Siddig would be a great casting for that because he has played characters that are both good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
For lack of a better term, I think he could do that role of sort of a Middle Eastern or even an American Middle Eastern very well.
Yeah, he's played so many different cultural characters that, you could do almost anything with him. He's
absolutely
really good for that part. Yeah.
And, you know, as far as some of the, I would probably put Tim Russ in there as well as one of the individuals who could play sort of sidekick to the major bad guys because he's getting up in years and he plays very different roles as well.
I should have looked at the rest of the cast of Sesame Street and seen who we could use.
Big Bird. Let's use Big Bird. But I think that's where my casting would go. I think I'd probably bring in more recognizable names in box office today. As far as the girlfriend goes, I mean, it could be anybody. Saldana's a great add to that. I would almost say Emily Blunt as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's funny. I was actually looking at her.
Really like Emily Blunt,
Tom Cruise could also play one of the head bad guys, if not the Colonel himself. If you've seen him in Collateral, he doesn't come off as a smiling, happy, kind of go-lucky guy that we've seen in many, many movies.
I always find it awkward when he doesn't do that.
Yeah.
I wish he had been that one with the
Fox
mummy.
Jamie Foxx was a great choice for that, but I think that a guy who you don't expect to play a part like that, like Cruise, and the part he played in Collateral just blew me away. I thought, for me, that was some of his best acting.
Mm-hmm. And it's not often he does a secondary character. He does it from time to time.
If he's really interested in the script and it's fun. Like sort of with Tropic Thunder.
Yeah,
he had so much fun doing that.
Yeah.
So I think that would be my picks.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Those are good picks. All right, Sam, take us home.
Okay, so to be honest with you, I did not plan this. It's just the way it happened. I was watching the movie, and It just happened. I want Charlize Theron as Rolly.
You know, I almost did that myself. Yeah. I almost did a gender swap there.
Yeah, because, and it wasn't intentional. It's just that I saw it and I'm like, she would make a great Rolly.
I didn't. Yeah, I didn't. It wasn't an immediate thing, but as I was doing research and then I was trying to come up with female roles and I was looking at things like Red Sparrow and she, what was the one she did that was similar? The spy thing.
Atomic Blonde.
Atomic Blonde. Yeah. It was Atomic Blonde.
Yeah, you mentioned it earlier, actually.
Yeah, and yeah, I did. I actually at one point thought, like, oh, do I even want a male in this part anymore?
I never even thought about gender swapping. That's a great idea.
Yeah, and I didn't do it on purpose. Like I said, I was watching it. I'm like, she would be great in that role.
And I totally agree with you.
Yeah. So what I did is I stayed on that theme for my Leo Murphy McCarthy as well, because I also, and she works really well in the FBI agent role as well, even better than as a cop, Gabrielle Union.
Hmm. Okay.
Right? Because she's really good in those types of roles, right? Mm-hmm. For my Lipton, he's played skeevy cop so many times, but because he's so good at it, I went Frank Whaley. He was in one of the Marvel movies. He played the partner in the first Iron Fist. He was in Career Opportunities, Swing Kids.
Okay,
yeah, he's done a lot of stuff. If you saw him, you'd know exactly who he was. Okay. For my DeFranco, and you know what, I'm going to keep him American because he's a gun dealer working with the terrorists. See, it works.
That's a great idea.
And he's
just thinking, though, that's the good thing about going last. I can make this work.
I can make this work, exactly. And because my DeFranco's a little bit older and he can still be DeFranco, I went with Steve Buscemi.
Skeevy, yeah.
All right.
For my Colonel Mason, I went with Tim Roth. That's why when you said General Ross, I'm thinking Tim Roth because he was.
He does good military. Yeah. Both in Hulk movies.
Yes, yeah. For my Andy, I was, again, it's because I was doing a little bit of gender swapping, I went with Joe Keery from Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. Younger, I'd like to see him get more work outside of Stranger Things. He's actually starting to get some exposure, but he's kind of gotten typecast as a sidekick, and I'm going to stay there.
You're not going to help him at all.
Not at all. And then for my Ellen/Alan character, I was thinking movie star as well, so I went with Sam Rockwell.
Okay, yeah, because you gender swap, so you need to gender swap that role as well.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Because I didn't want to go with the whole lesbian story thing because, I mean, it would have felt forced.
Yeah, right? No, I don't. And usually I just roll my eyes if it feels forced, if it doesn't feel natural. Yeah.
And there's too much of it right now, I think, in cinema. Not that I'm against it, but I think it's showing up more and more in television and in other mainstream media that let's stop beating ourselves over the head about it. We know it exists, yeah. But... Why do we have to put it in?
Well, again, it doesn't. If it suits the story, it should be in there. Right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And if it suits the story,
yeah. But if it's there just to be there, then it does kind of feel like it feels like pandering to a certain extent.
Yeah, and if we got a secondary cast of more than just one protege, like a team of people putting out these props together, you can easily make one of them gay. Doesn't matter.
I mean, it's a reality. I mean, and they should be represented in film and television, but you don't need to make it something that is there just to
overdo it. Yeah.
Right. And for my director, it's funny that you both brought up people from Guardians of the Galaxy because I went with James Gunn. Right. Because, I mean, let's face it, with his trauma days.
Yeah,
he has done so. He's worked with so much practical effects that
absolutely, yeah.
And he'd bring just that right amount of humor into it.
I think that's important for this movie. Yeah. I think even though it's fun, I think it misses its opportunities for humor.
Yeah.
At times
it does. Yeah,
you know, funny that you should say that because it just came to mind that Robert Rodriguez would be very good.
He would be. Yeah, well.
Again, another guy who's worked with practical effects a lot
and digital as well.
And digital, yeah,
and yeah.
Right, and the Galaxy movies were the ones that made me think it because he deals with the humor very well, but he also isn't afraid to go to those dark places.
Yep. Mm.
And that's where it should be. This should be that mix of light and dark and should be fun, but have that underlying darkness as well, giving the subject matter.
Yeah, but I mean, typically I stay away from really well-known actors when I go to directors because everybody's sort of using them, right? Mm-hmm. But this time he felt so perfect.
Yeah, well, and that's why I went smaller with this one because I felt like it came from a small place. You could still build something really good with a smaller, lesser-known cast. And like I said, the only person that I did that was really well-known was Zoe Saldana because initially that was going to be an actress role and I wanted somebody who was recognizable in that role. Yeah, I think pulling from television – might be really good for this type of thing, yeah. and lesser known actors, and that you can build the careers out of, because I think there's still potential for a very good and long running franchise with FX if a revival. And there was a remake planned back about 2010,
yeah.
and just never materialized. But
didn't that have something to do with rights over the movie as well?
I think that had a lot to do with it, probably because of the Orion sale and whatnot and who owns what. So I'm sure if they ever iron that out, they'll look at this again, because it is a very good franchise to and with a really good idea with and a lot of potential to revive as something else. So,
well, yeah. The House of Mouse keeps going the way they're going, they're going to own everybody.
Oh, yeah. It's just going to be Hollywood. It's just going to be called Disneyland entirely.
Yeah.
You know, L.A. is going to be Disneyland.
Yeah, no, it'll be the big two, Warner Brothers, Disney.
Yeah.
And then what do you do in terms of catering to sometimes a smaller audience and not thinking about that family friendliness that Disney is famous for? Where do you go for that?
Disney's definitely going to have to learn, and hopefully they'll keep on people. The biggest part of that merger that I was most worried about was Fox Searchlight. That gave us lots of great, cool little indie films.
Right.
And, you know, I think with that merger, I'm sure they're looking at what they can do and where they could do it. Disney Plus is coming, but I think that's going to be very Disney and Marvel and Star Wars. With that sale, they also have interest in Hulu. And I think there's a foreign streaming service as well, but Hulu's right. a good place to dump a lot of the and try some series stuff on your Fox franchises that you could revive. I mean, Die Hard could make a good TV revival if you wanted to try it without Bruce Willis. That might be a safer place to go rather than doing
like they did with the Lethal Weapon. Which
I am a little worried about the Alien series they're talking about, but okay, they've screwed it up so often that maybe this trying is the thing it on needs, TV yeah. might be the way to go.
Trying it on TV with the current culture of what we have, like The Walking Dead and more violent shows like that, I think it might work.
Yeah, well, and Disney's throwing some like big movie budgets at their Disney Plus platform. And we're seeing those kind of budgets being already put on Netflix.
Yeah.
So, like, the whole model's changing right now, and I don't even know how it's going to shake out. I have no idea.
And the thing is Disney owns the Fox banner now.
Yeah.
Right? So there's nothing to say that they can't keep producing.
Oh, I think they will. Yeah. I think the only thing that we know is Fox. I think the Fantastic Four and X-Men franchises will just get absorbed into Marvel Studios.
They've already said that that's what they're doing. Yeah. And they're completely rebooting them. Apparently. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
But they didn't take Fox.
Yeah. Kind of have to.
They only took Fox, 20th Century Fox.
No, they got most of the networks except for the sports stuff, which stayed it with Fox as a news and sports network. And even then, there were some they did get they had to sell off. So, but I do believe the TV goes with it. So it's Simpsons, Die Hard, Aliens, Predator, Prometheus, and on and on and on. There is a ton of stuff that they're going to have to sort out. I was really shocked that deal even closed about a week from this recording. So crazy.
I wasn't surprised that it was going to go through because...
Oh, I knew it was going to go through. I just figured it was going to be another year before we heard it get finalized.
All the news that was going on, it was coming sooner than later.
Yeah. No, usually a deal that big is like a two-year deal.
At least,
we knew it was going to close. We knew that was going to finalize, but it takes a long time to finalize it all with the amount of content they were talking about. Yeah,
well, Disney's in a rush to get a lot of that stuff back in their pocket, you know, especially the Marvel stuff.
Oh, Marvel moving into a new wave of stuff trying to figure out where they're
going. Other properties, yeah.
And now that in Phase 4 they're going cosmic, I mean, perfect time to bring in Fantastic Four and Galactus.
Yeah, and you can move towards Avengers versus X-Men and all sorts of good stuff. So, I'm looking forward to see how that definitely shakes out. There's a wealth of material
to draw from.
Absolutely. And we'll keep following it and giving our opinions along the way. But you know what else?
What else?
What else? Well, if you want to support Disney and Fox, that's fine. But you know who's more important? This invasion of the remake, and support us by just listening to the show like you always do, but telling your friends and family about the show as well. Tell them where to find us. We are on a ton of different platforms: iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Radio Public. We get paid for Radio Public for every listen, just doing what you're doing.
At least we think we do.
Yeah, I hope so. we're even on freaking YouTube.
Well, I can't say YouTube's been totally horrible to me, but at that, saying that, I will say from what we say on my show, like, subscribe, share with your friends, talk about it, and post it all on social media.
Absolutely. And our social media is at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com. Don't forget to send us your comments, your suggestions, and your corrections. Please, please send us some fan challenges. The weirder, the better. We like a challenge, and don't make it easy on us.
No, actually, weirder is actually better, just because they're not as hard to remake as movies like this. Right. And the one we did a couple weeks ago with Real Genius was not an easy one to remake.
No, that was one of the more tougher ones we've done in a while.
Yeah. So yeah, weird is good. Weird is very good.
Weird gives us a lot of places to go.
Yes. And they're fun to do.
They are indeed.
I liked Weird.
They are indeed. And Richard, again, tell everybody where to find your show, The First Layer.
You can find The First Layer on Facebook under the group section. Just type in facebook.com/group/The First Layer. Come over and join us. We get a lot of great people. If you're having problems with 3D printing or you want to get into it, it's a great place to start. Or you can find us on, you can find me, myself, on Twitter and on Instagram at Cleveland_IM. And then over on YouTube, you can find our show at The First Layer on YouTube as well. And we do three shows a week. We have two recorded shows every Tuesday and Thursday. They release at around 5 o'clock Mountain Standard Time. And we do a live stream every Saturday night at 7 p.m. So come join us, talk about 3D printing and where it's going. And if you're having problems, we answer your questions.
There we go. And now Richard gets in shit. Richard does not follow us on Twitter, nor do we follow Richard on Twitter.
We don't follow each other on Twitter. I know I follow you on Facebook.
Well, yeah, well, you and I follow each other
on Twitter. No, I follow I think I follow the other show on your show. Okay. On Facebook.
We will rectify that.
Yeah, let's rectify that. I did bring my tablet.
I know I
do. We're going to have to do an Instagram photo at the end of this. You know that, right?
Richard and I used to host other shows, so I know I had to follow it because I set up those social media things.
Yeah. There you go.
So I know I'm following them. Yeah. And you should, too.
That's right. Follow these guys because, you know, I've listened to their show, and I love the show when I'm not on it. And now that I'm on it, after 4 years, thanks, Jay. It's only took 4 years to get me here.
I need breathing space.
I think that you guys should follow these guys and check them out. Check them out over at go check Jason over at Words and Pictures if you're a comic book fan. I mean, here in Calgary, he's the man who's got everything that you need.
I'm the comic book man with the plan.
You bet.
Thanks for joining us, Richard.
Well, thanks for having me, man.
I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
And I'm Richard Cleveland.
And we are out of here.
I'll take that key, Ronnie.
It's something you should know, Mason.
Give me the key, Ronnie.
And this hand is the ammo for the gun. And this is crazy glue. 1,001 uses. Now 1,002.
No! No!
Mason, drop the gun!
No, don't shoot!
It's a mistake!
Don't shoot!